Chapter 8. The archaeologists heard the Boeing fly up the fjord, too. They rushed out of their hut in time to catch a brief look at the plane's outline reflected in the ice glare by the landing lights. They could clearly make out the illuminated cabin windows and the extended landing gear. Almost immediately came the sound of shrieking metal, and a scant instant later the vibration of the impact carried through the frozen surface. The lights went dead, but the protest of tortured metal continued for several seconds. Then, suddenly, a dead silence swept out of the darkness, a silence that overpowered the dreary moan of the wind. The archaeologists stood in disbelieving shock. Stunned, frozen immobile, immune to the cold, they stared into the black night like haunted statues. "Good Lord," Grundquist finally muttered in awe, "it crashed in the fjord." Lily could not conceal the shock in her voice. "Horrible. No one could have survived uninjured."
"More than likely dead if they went in the water."
"Probably why there's no fire," added Graham.
"Did anyone see what kind of plane it was?" asked Toskins.
Graham shook his head. "Happened too fast. Good size, though. Looked to be multi-engine. Might be an ice recon patrol."
"How far do you make it?" asked Grundquist.
"Roughly a kilometer and a quarter." Lily's expression was pale and strained. "We've got to do something to help them."
Grundquist took a visual bearing and rubbed his unprotected cheeks. "Let's get back inside before we freeze and form a plan before we charge off half-cocked."
Lily began to come back on track. "Gather up blankets, any extra warm clothing," she said brusquely. "I'll see to the medical supplies."
"Mike, get on the radio," Grundquist ordered. "Notify the weather station at Dannebourg. They'll spread the word to Air Force rescue units at Thule."
Graham made an affirmative motion with his hand and was the first one inside the hut.
"We'd better bring along tools for prying any survivors from the wreckage," said Hoskins.
Grundquist nodded as he yanked on his parka and gloves.
"Good thinking. Figure out whatever else we'll require. I'll hook up the sled to one of the snowmobiles. We can pile all the stuff in that."
5 minutes ago, they had all been asleep. Now they were throwing on cold weather gear and hurriedly rushing about their respective chores. Forgotten was the enigmatic Byzantine coin. Forgotten was the warm comfort of sleep. All that mattered was the urgency of getting to the downed plane as quickly as possible. Returning outside, head against a sudden shift of wind, Grundquist dashed around the hut to a small snow-covered shed that protected the project's two snowmobiles. He kicked away the ice that had formed around the bottom of the door and pulled it open. Inside, a small oil heater struggled with all the efficiency of a candle inside a freezer to keep the interior air 20 degrees above the temperature outside. He tried the starter buttons, but the batteries were badly drained after months of hard use, and both engines balked at turning over. Cursing in vapored breaths, he removed his heavy gloves with his teeth and began yanking on the manual pull ropes. The engine on the first snowmobile caught on the fifth attempt, but the second played stubborn. Finally, after 32 pulls, Grundquist counted them, the engine obstinately coughed to life. He hitched the tongue of a large sled to the rear catch on the snowmobile, whose engine had had extra time to warm up. He finished none too soon, as his fingers were beginning to turn numb. The others had already stacked the supplies and equipment outside the entryway to the hut when he rode up. Except for Grundquist, they were all bundled up in down-filled jumpsuits. The sled was loaded to the top of its sideboards in less than 2 minutes. Graham passed everyone a heavy-duty flashlight, and they were ready to set off.
"If they crash through the ice," shouted Hoskins above the wind, "we might as well forget it."
"He's right," Graham shouted back. "They'll be dead from hypothermia by now."
Lily's eyes turned hard behind her ski mask.
"Pessimism never saved anybody. I suggest you big jocks get a move on."
Grundquist grabbed her by the waist and lifted her onto the snowmobile.
"Do what the lady says, boys. There are people dying out there."
He swung a leg over the seat in front of Lily and cracked the throttle as Hoskins and Graham raced for the idling snowmobile in the shed. The engine's exhaust purred and the rear tread gripped the snow. He cut a sharp U-turn and took off toward the shore, the sled bouncing along behind. They swept over the uneven ice-covered stones of the beach onto the frozen fjord. It was dangerous going. The beam from the single light mounted in front of the hand grips wavered over the ice pack in a crazy jumble of white flashes against black shadows, making it nearly impossible for Grundquist to see any pressure ridges until they were plowing up and over them like a lifeguard boat through heavy surf.
and no amount of driving skill could prevent the heavily laden sled from veering and seesawing in their wake. Lily clasped her hands around Grandquist's great stomach in a death grip, her eyes closed, head buried against his shoulder. She yelled for him to slow down, but he ignored her. She turned and spied the bobbing light of the other snowmobile rapidly closing on their tail. Without the drag of the sled, the overtaking vehicle, with Hoskins steering and Graham behind, quickly caught up and passed. Soon all Lily could see of the other two men was an indistinct blur of hunched figures through a trailing cloud of fine surface snow. She felt Grandquist tense as a large metal object rose up out of the darkness at the far edge of the light's ray. Grandquist abruptly jammed the hand grips around to his left. The edges of the front skis dug into the ice, and the snowmobile swerved away just 1 meter from striking a piece of the plane's shattered wing. He made a frantic attempt to straighten out, but the sudden twist of centrifugal force whipped the sled around like the tail of a maddened rattlesnake. The top-heavy sled went into a wild skid, jackknifed against the snowmobile and snapped the hitch. The tips of the runners dug in and it flipped upside down, scattering its load in the air like debris from an explosion. Grandquist shouted something, but the words were cut off as the flat side of a runner unerringly caught him on the shoulder, knocking him off the snowmobile. He was thrown in a wide arc like a demolition ball about to smash a wall. The hood of his coat was jerked back, and the ice rose up and struck his unprotected head. Lily's arms were torn from around Grandquist's waist as he vanished into the darkness. She thought she might be thrown clear. The sled missed her, crashing to a stop a few meters away, but the snowmobile had other ideas. Without Grandquist's hands on the clutch lever and throttle, it came to a stop, teetering precariously at a 45-degree angle, engine popping at idle. It hung there for a brief moment and then slowly heeled over to one side, falling on Lily's legs from her hips down and pinning her helplessly against the ice sheet. Hoskins and Graham were not immediately aware of the accident behind them, but they were about to run into a disaster of their own. After covering another 200 meters, Graham turned, more out of curiosity than intuition, to check how far they had outdistanced Lily and Grandquist. He was surprised to see their light beam far to the rear, stationary and pointing downward. He pounded Hoskins's shoulder and shouted in his ear, "I think something's happened to the others." It had been Hoskins's original intention to find the depression in the ice carved by the plane after it touched down and then follow it to the final crash site. His eyes were straining to penetrate the gloom beyond when Graham interrupted his concentration. The words came indistinct over the growl of the snowmobile's exhaust. He twisted his head and shouted back at Graham. "I can't hear you! Turn back! Something's wrong!" Hoskins nodded in understanding and refocused his attention on the terrain ahead. The distraction was to cost them. Too late, he glimpsed one of the troughs gouged by the landing gear almost as he was on it. The snowmobile flew over the 2-meter opening in the ice and became airborne. The weight of the two riders forced the nose to dip down, and it collided against the opposite wall with a sharp crack like the blast of a pistol. Fortunately for Hoskins and Graham, they were pitched over the edge and onto the ice surface, their bodies tumbling crazily as if they were cotton-stuffed dolls thrown across a waxed floor. 30 seconds later, a stunned Graham, moving like a 90-year-old man, stiffly lifted himself to his hands and knees. He sat there dazed, not fully aware of how he got there. He heard a strange hissing sound and looked around. Hoskins was sitting in an upright position, doubled up in agony with both hands tightly pressed against his groin. He was sucking and exhaling air through clenched teeth while rocking back and forth. Graham removed his outer mitten and lightly touched his nose. It didn't feel broken, but blood was flowing from the nostrils, forcing him to breathe through his mouth. A series of stretches indicated all joints were still mobile, all limbs in place. Not too surprising, considering the heavy padding of his clothing. He crawled over to Hoskins, whose tortured hissing had become a string of mournful groans. "What happened?" Graham asked, regretting such a stupid question the instant he uttered it. "We hit a gash furrowed in the ice by the aircraft," Hoskins managed between groans. "Jesus, I think I've been castrated. Let me have a look." Graham pried away the hands and unzipped the front of Hoskins's jumpsuit. He took a flashlight from a pocket and pushed the switch. He could not suppress a smile. "Your wife will need another excuse to dump you. There's no sign of blood. Your sex life is secure." "Where's Lily? And Grandquist?" Hoskins asked haltingly. "About 200 meters back. We've got to make our way around the ice opening and check out their situation." Hoskins rose painfully to his feet and hobbled to the edge of the ice break.
Amazingly, the snowmobile's headlamp was still burning, its dim glow playing on the bottom of the fjord while backlighting the bubbles that traveled up 6 meters to the surface. Graham walked over and peered down. Then they looked at each other.
As lifesavers, said Hoskins dejectedly, we'd better stick with archaeology.
Quiet! Graham snapped suddenly. He cupped his mittens to his ears and turned from side to side like a radar dish. Then he stopped and pointed excitedly at flashing lights in the distance.
Hot damn, he shouted. There's a helicopter coming up the fjord.
Lily floated in and out of reality. She could not understand why it became increasingly difficult for her to think straight. She lifted her head and looked around for Granqvist. He lay unmoving several meters away. She shouted, desperately trying to get a response, but he lay as though dead. She gave up and gradually entered a half-dream world as her legs lost all sensation of feeling. Only when she began to shiver did Lily realize she was in a mild state of shock. She was certain Graham and Hoskins would return any moment, but the moments soon grew into painful minutes, and they did not show. She felt very tired and was about to gratefully slip away into sleep when she heard a strange thumping sound approaching from overhead. Then a dazzling light cut the dark sky and blinded her eyes. Loose snow was kicked up by a sudden windstorm and swept around her. The thumping sound died in intensity, and a vague figure, encircled by the light, came toward her. The figure became a man in a heavy fur parka who immediately summed up the situation, took a strong grip on the snowmobile, and heaved it off her legs to an upright position. He walked around her until the light illuminated his face. Lily's eyes weren't focusing as they should, but they stared into a pair of sparkling green eyes that took her breath away. They seemed to reflect hardness, gentleness, and sincere concern in one glinting montage. They narrowed a fraction when he saw that she was a woman. She wondered dizzily where he came from. Lily couldn't think of anything to say except, "Oh, am I ever glad to see you?"
"Name's Dirk Pitt," answered a warm voice. "If you're not busy, why don't you have dinner with me tomorrow night?"